there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.
All right, today we are joined with Aaron and Hall. Aaron, thanks for joining us here today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, we're excited to talk to you about writing and about your career a little bit. Now, one of the things that we're going to talk about is that you're an indie author.
I am.
So
yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what it means to be an indie author. And I know that this has changed, especially in the last 10 years
or so.
Like it's a totally different beast. So tell me kind of what you've experienced jumping into this field.
Well, being an indie author means you're not represented by a big traditional publisher. You write and publish the book yourself. And thanks to services like Amazon KDP and Ingram Spark, it's anybody can publish a book now, you know? And for a long time, it was kind of like seen as the easy way out.
Sure.
For authors of, you couldn't get represented by an agent or a publisher, so you're just doing indie. But the environment around indie publishing has changed so much in the last 10 years because we've seen so many success stories, you know, of people who came up through indie publishing, you know, people like Andy Weir and like Hugh Howey, who ended up like really taking off through the indie space. And there's some people who are choosing to stay indie now just because you get a bigger cut of book sales, you know, typically.
And you have a little more creative freedom.
Absolutely. I mean, you have complete creative freedom. There's no one to tell you no, for better or for worse. That's what indie publishing is like now.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because I think we'll kind of compare and contrast a few different issues with indie versus traditional publishing.
And we're aware that a lot of people that could be listening to this podcast are like, curious about breaking into publishing or in the process of breaking into publishing. And, and this is a really great avenue because it's been a long time since this was an issue for me. Like I've been traditionally published for about 20 years.
Oh yeah.
And so when indie publishing comes up, it ends up being one of the things where I'm like, I understand some things about it in theory, but somebody who's doing it is going to have a lot better tips and practice. So we're really grateful that you're here.
Oh, and I am a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah. When it comes to that. Well, let's jump into a few things. Let's just start on the money side.
Totally.
So when we're talking percentages, what's typical range for if you're being represented and going through a publisher, and then Aaron, what is the percentage for you being an indie author?
All right, like in traditional publishing, often if you're working with an agent, the agent is taking 15 to 20%.
15 to 20% of your cut.
Of your cut, yeah. Right? And so if the agent is getting you good work and getting you good deals, that 15 to 20% can feel small because it could be that they're getting you a deal that's twice as good as you would get on your own. Mm-hmm. And basically, your whole hope with an agent and the reason you would keep an agent is that the agent is more than paying for themselves.
Right.
Right? Like their cut could be justified by, yeah, but they're getting me a better deal at a better place.
Totally.
And they're negotiating it in a more hard-nosed way such that, yeah, they're worth 15% or 20% depending on what it is. Sometimes it might be 1% for domestic and 1% for foreign,
gotcha.
For
yeah,
example,
yeah.
Right?
So and then what is your and you don't have to do your specific cut, but what's the range for a published author? What percent are you taking versus the publisher's taking?
Look, the range on a hardcover book is you're going to be getting somewhere between 10 to 15%.
Okay.
And sometimes that goes up as your sales go up. Mm-hmm. Like often the contract is like, you know, you're at 10% or maybe even less for the first, you know, 5,000 books or 10,000 books or whatever, some number of books. And then it might tick up to 12.5% for the next tier of books. And if you sell enough, if you get up over a certain number, it might tick up to 15%. And like in any business situation, everything is negotiable.
Sure.
But those are some basic numbers. The percentages are lower for paperback. And part of those numbers are created because in theory, it's about 70% to cover the cost of the book. And then the publisher's getting about 15 and you're getting about 15. Mm-hmm. Like in theory, that's where it comes from. Oh,
gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha.
And those numbers change around on ebooks a little bit. Those numbers change around on paperback. But that's the basics of what you're looking at.
Can you kind of give me a red flag percentage? So if a publisher said, hey, you're going to get 2%, I assume that's a red flag. Like,
yeah. I mean, look, there's certain percentages that would be sort of insulting. Where most of the negotiation is happening, though, in traditional publishing, is it's happening around advance. Mm-hmm. It's happening around guaranteed money, right? Which is one of the most beautiful things about traditional publishing is you might have a guaranteed advance.
Yeah, money where you up know, front.
I'm making at least this much money for taking this assignment, mm-hmm. right? And so if you're trying to support a family, if you're trying to have a lifestyle that that is sustainable year to year. Sometimes those advances are nice to just know, okay, at least I can count on this.
Totally, and this isn't just advance of it being released. This is advance of you writing it too, right? Yeah, so you're getting paid to write it with the advance.
And this depends from writer to writer.
As a project to project.
And as a brand new writer, it's pretty rare to get much advance mm-hmm. In fact, it's almost unheard of to get an advance until you show a finished mm-hmm. book. And you often don't get a great advance if it's your first book.
Right.
Because part of the reason they're giving you an advance is they're saying you've got a history of selling books. And based on that history of selling books and the quality of the premise of the new thing, they're like, yeah, as we do the math, this should be a fairly safe advance to give you where we feel like we can recoup this. And guess what? If they don't recoup their advances, they stop happening.
Yeah, right?
Or they stop being
you're
assigned.
You're not getting advances at that
but
point.
But if they're recouping their advances or coming close, then yeah, you probably can get another good advance down the road, and that's partly how you build some regularity of income with a weird job like writing.
So you shouldn't think of it as a win if your advance ends up being more than what you would have got paid otherwise, right? That's a loss because there goes your advances in the future.
Yeah, you're not after to get a one-time astronomical advance unless you've only got one book in you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's true.
But like in general, if you're trying to build a career, yeah, you're hoping that you get an advance that is reasonable and fits, and you're hoping that your sales outperform the advance. Now, part of what makes it an advance is it's an advance against royalties, if you were saying what it truly is, right? Mm-hmm. And so that means you're going to have to recoup that advance through royalties before you get paid more.
Right.
But often in the contract, that advance is yours to keep, often, even if it never recoups.
Yeah.
And that guaranteed money is kind of nice.
So, Aaron, let's talk about percentages for you. What's typical for, and obviously you're not speaking for all independent writers, right?
Never.
Just kind of your experience when it comes to percentages. What are you looking at?
Ballpark stuff.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, I mean, my book offerings are so diversified because I have my own Shopify store where I have personal book fulfillment through Book Vault. I get huge margins through that. Mm-hmm. Ingram Spark is a great way to get worldwide reach through bookstores and libraries. I take a smaller cut there. But I'm going to talk about specifically Amazon KDP.
Sure.
Because that's kind of like the flagship self-publishing service. Typically, if you want to price your ebook more than $2.99, you can take a 70% cut of that ebook sale.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So Amazon only takes 30, you get 70. Pretty nice. When it comes to paperbacks, it really depends on how much you want to price it. I mean, if you want to price your book competitively, like, for example, The Legend of is my flagship, fantasy comedy. I price it at $19.99 on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I get about $6.50 per paperback sale. So I'm getting 30-35% of that, if I'm doing my math correct. I mean, I'm a writer. I'm not a mathematician.
Which would be, according to traditional publishing, the fee for the author and the publisher.
Yeah, exactly.
About 30%.
Yeah. So tell me this. How much are you paying up front? Who's paying for the printings of these books? Is that something?
Oh, they handle it. Yeah. I mean, it is free to self-publish a book. It does not cost you a dime. As long as you have the manuscript and the cover locked and loaded and ready to plug in, you're ready to start making money.
So they will print the books.
Mm-hmm. They'll kind of print on demand, right?
Exactly.
Orders come in. And so, this used to be a field where you would have to order a garage full of books.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
And that would be a deterrent for a lot of people going, okay, like,
yeah, because most people don't have just like $3,000 or $4,000 laying around to print off a ton of books.
Yeah, so, and so, to have the faith that they're going to know how to sell them if they got a garage full of books.
Totally. Yeah, so we were joking earlier tonight about you having a trunk full of The Legend of in your car, right?
I have like a bookcase full of inventory at my house.
So you do have inventory, and you had to pay.
Oh yeah,
for that inventory.
Like I ordered those at cost to print and then shipped to my house, and then I resell them as signed books on my website.
Gotcha.
And my margins, honestly, like it is most cost effective for me to sell signed books on my website.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'll sell a signed copy of The Legend of Uff for $24.99 because it's signed, and then I charge $6 for shipping. But I get paid if we subtract the expenses that I pay for printing the book and shipping it to me, I end up making like, $17-18 per book.
Gotcha.
Isn't that awesome?
It's crazy. And yeah, those numbers are like awesome to me. What I mean? Like I've never made anything close to those kind of margins.
Well, do you have your own store where you ship, signed books and stuff?
No.
Would your publisher let you do that?
Maybe.
Because, hey, man, I'm telling you, like, people are buying them. They love signed books. You're
saying it's a way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My earnings like doubled or tripled when I started doing that.
Yeah, well, I should probably look into it. It's nice to hear about this smart kind of hustle. I love it. Yeah.
No. That's totally smart. So let's talk about the next thing is you mentioned that you have like total creative control.
Yes.
Right. So that's a double edged sword. So talk to me about that double edged sword. What's the good and the bad of that?
Well, you got to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I first started writing and publishing, I mean, I've started writing my first book, Foreordained. It's a Christian fantasy epic that I started when I was 15.
Okay.
And, I think I overheard in your previous podcast of talking about, kind of being nervous to write your first project. I didn't have that. I had a little bit of an ego as a teen, and I was like, I'm a great storyteller. This is going to be a hit. Like, people can eat this up. They didn't. But so, I mean,
you were that anime character. It's like, I'm kind the of, guy.
Yeah, it's like, this is going to go great, everybody. And it's, I obviously had some things to learn. How did we get on this? I totally lost my train of thought.
We're talking about creative control.
Pros and cons of having
creative control. That's why I brought it up. Yeah. I mean, the original cover that I creative directed, through my friend Shelby, who's a terrific designer. I gave her my idea of here's how I want it to look. And it wasn't great because I wasn't a very good designer. I didn't have like much of a visual eye back then. And that's something that I've had to kind of develop, as I went to college and as I've worked in marketing in a professional capacity. And I also, at the very beginning, like my only beta reader was my dad. And, he was a bit of a reader. Like he knew what a good story looked like, but I think he also was very biased on what he believed made a good story. So I only had that one perspective.
Sure.
But now, I mean, with the second Legend of is at the time of this recording, it's coming out in a couple months, but by the time you're listening, it's going to be available in stores everywhere. So go get it. I had over a dozen beta readers and I had a designer who had the exact look I was looking for. I'm like, this is a YA fantasy comedy. If we can put together a cover that has an Adventure Time vibe, like that nails it. And he had, art on his Instagram that had the exact look I was looking for. So I DM'd him and I said, dude, you want to do a book cover? And he was like, sure, let's go. So yeah, I mean, you need to have a team of people who will tell you the parts that are working and the parts that are not and listen to them, because you are an island. You are one perspective. You are one person. And maybe your approach to the story needs a little bit of work and you need to have like a tribe of people that will help elevate your work. So that's.
And so right now you have about a dozen beta readers that you use to do that. And these are people that you've curated over a series of different books that you've written.
I mean, they were newsletter subscribers, on my newsletter that I send out.
Oh, like, interesting. These aren't necessarily like your buddies and stuff. These are like more like fans.
Yeah. Some of them I haven't met in person ever.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool.
I had them fill out a Google form,
which actually seems better and smarter than
they connected to you because they like the stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But I mean, they're also like kind of disconnected from me. They're not a family or family member or friend who's scared of hurting my feelings.
Right.
But it is like, one of my fans is in South Africa, and he beta read the first book and he really enjoyed it. And now, he signed up for the second one because he's eager for it. But I put together a Google form which with some pretty targeted questions of, you know, what was the last book you read? What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it?
Yeah, let's talk specifically. What are the things that you look for in a good beta reader? What's kind of the qualifications?
Highly opinionated, highly analytical.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, those are the big two pillars. I mean, if you really know what a good story looks like, I'm going to trust your opinion. Because I did have a beta reader on one book who had like a really basic question about the character, or it was like, is this person an orc? Are they an orc? And I'm like, dude, they were called like this person, the orc, like all throughout the book.
Yeah.
Like, what were you reading? I have not reached out to that person again to beta read. But yeah, like I ask these potential beta readers pretty targeted questions of like, explain why this works or explain why this doesn't work. And if they have a pretty detailed answer, I'm like, okay, that's
good. So 12 is kind of your current magic number, but yeah, you can see that going up or down, but about that.
Yeah.
Brandon, where are you at with beta readers? How many beta readers do you use that are kind of your, I think your list is smaller right now, right? Or
My list is smaller. You know, I'm putting a lot of weight on the editor at the publisher.
Awesome.
You know, cause this is going to be a seasoned editor.
Totally.
And it's partly a seasoned editor, not just because like they are in theory, it's because I've worked with them on 12 books. Or something.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've got personal history with most of the editors that I'm working with now. And so
is it Lisa? Is she?
Yes, there's Lisa Abrams at Penguin Random House, who used to be at Simon & Schuster.
Gotcha.
And you know, she did like my Beyonder series, and she did Five Kingdoms series, and she is currently doing my Guardian series.
All right.
And then you've got Lisa Mangum.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking.
Another Lisa.
Yeah.
Who is at
you only Shadow work Mountain. With Lisa, so yeah, right?
I prefer Lisa. and she's at Shadow Mountain. And then before that there was Emily Watts, there's other people, and then there's Chris Schobinger at Shadow Mountain, who's kind of like half editor, half acquisitions, half the head publisher guy. Yeah, yeah. But he's always been heavily involved on all my books. Mm-hmm. So look, there's a tier of like industry folks.
Totally.
That might be one way to say it. You know, so I've got my industry folks who, these are the people paying me those advances.
Uh-huh.
And so I owe to them giving their judgment extra weight in the same way that you would give the judgment of an investor extra weight, because they are investing in me. And then I have people like Jason who are just friends over the course of life, where I did the same thing that you're doing through your questionnaires.
Totally.
Where I just paid attention to who was giving me feedback that made sense to me.
Totally.
Right? Because I remember in college sometimes being in, you'd break off with four random people in an English class and you'd give each other feedback. And sometimes the feedback was very confusing, and disorienting.
Yeah.
Because you just didn't have similar types of judgment. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking for someone with creative judgment that harmonizes with mine.
Yeah.
And I love it if they don't always agree with me. I need somebody who's going to tell me like it
is. Agreed.
Right? Like for sure. But also, it has to be intelligible.
Totally.
Right? It has to be like, oh, I see what you're saying. It's analytical enough that you've made a good case.
Totally.
I understand the case, and now I know how to approach fixing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And I mean, I do have some friends who beta read for me, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I have friends who are avid readers and know what a good story looks like. So, you know, if they want to be involved, like, sure, like, I'll send you an early copy. But yeah, like, having that feedback from the people is so, so helpful.
Yeah. Brandon, what would you say the biggest difference in your experience between the beta readers like myself versus someone like Lisa, and we have very different roles in that, and just kind of just so that our audience can kind of hear what just that contrast between what Aaron's getting.
Sure. The pro of the beta reader is it's kind of like you're going to a jury.
Like
a jury of your peers,
yeah.
Right? Like where you're getting a layman's view of what's good and bad about what you've written.
Mm-hmm.
The advantage of the editor is you're going to an expert,
yeah.
Right? Like the people that rise to the a position of editor in a place like Simon & Schuster and Random House. It's perhaps even more competitive than being an author.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's less slots. You know what I mean? Like it's very competitive. These people are being paid very well because they have impeccable judgment and because they're massive book nerds, right? And so, like, you get really quality judgment from these people. And so like basically it's, you're getting truly professional judgment. So no longer a jury of my peers. This is someone who's just a pro.
Yeah.
Right. And like, so I give it extra weight. I've learned I have to, because when I've worked with pros at that level, it's been really good feedback. You know what I mean? It's been the kind of feedback where you're like, I'm going to spend a couple months applying this feedback because you're showing me true north in a way I'm probably not going to get from a jury of my peers, which will be a more wavy line.
Yeah.
Right? And so like there's value there. That's one of the big advantages of a traditional publisher is it's gathered some serious experts.
Totally.
Right. And these experts are there because if their stuff doesn't perform, they're fired.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like if they've been there a while, it's because they figured some stuff out. Totally. Right. Like on how to help stuff perform. And like as a self-published person, as anyone who's doing this in an indie way, the whole game would be a game of how do I create that?
Exactly.
Right? Like at the publisher, I've got a marketing team. Mm-hmm. As an indie author, I have to be like, I'm the marketing team.
Yes.
I'm getting 30% of this or 35% of this because I am the publisher.
I'm earning 30%.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm doing the work.
Yeah.
If I'm doing this right, yep. I'm doing the work of a marketer and a publisher, and I'm doing the work as an author.
Yep.
Because I'm doing both things, I should, by all laws of justice, be being paid for both things. Yeah. And it's a lot of weight. It's a lot of weight to carry. Like,
hey,
like,
I yep.
So yep. Yeah, Aaron, talk to us a little bit about the marketing, just that whole aspect. What does that look like for you?
Exhausting.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I have to credit my friend ZS Diamante. He is an indie fantasy author who is killing it right now. You know, he's making a full-time living writing his books and doing conventions and stuff. And he stayed with me last year for StoryCon because he was coming out here from Colorado looking for a place to stay. And we were connected through Instagram. And I said, dude, I got a condo like 15 minutes from downtown Salt Lake. Like, and I got a futon with your name on it. Like, if you want to save some money on a hotel, just come stay with me. And he was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, chance to cut down on travel costs.
Sure.
So while he stayed with me, I freaking picked his brain.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, how do you make this work? How are you selling so many books? Like, how do I do this? And you know, the big piece of advice that he gave me was like, dude, it's organic content creation. You got to be posting on social media often. You got to be plugging your books. You got to be engaging with your audience. That's how you're going to start moving some books. And gosh dang it, he was right. You know, I made it a goal after that StoryCon. I was nervous, but I was like, you know what? 5 reels a week on Instagram and TikTok, plugging my book, trying to be funny and engaging, and just don't be a jerk. And we'll see where this goes. And thankfully, like The Legend of Uh had come out that month, and it's some of my best work. It is by far my highest selling book right now. People love it. But having the social media push behind that really helped it find its footing and find its audience, gain that momentum. So, I mean,
That sounds daunting to me.
Yeah,
it is. You know, I think some people might think, yeah, I have a full-time job. How hard is it to do, you know, 5 TikToks and 5 reels? But it is, it's creatively exhausting.
Oh, it is.
Right? To do that. And how do you come up with, because you can't have the same thing
over
and over again. So just walk me through how much time you spend on social media pushing stuff.
Or even just how do you attack it? Like, what's your methodology?
Well, I mean, you spend a lot of time scrolling, you know, for better or for worse. And I mean, I follow a lot of other bookish accounts and a lot of other authors. Get ideas, like see what they're posting. Yeah.
You're paying attention to what people are doing and what's working.
Yeah, absolutely. Get ideas and you're like, try to have fun with it. Like for the love of all that's good and holy, have some fun with it. Otherwise you'll get miserable. But I try to make a content calendar at the beginning of every month.
Okay. That's good.
I plan out like some ideas for like things I'd like to post throughout the month. Usually I don't follow it to a T because sometimes you see a trend pop up or a friend makes a post like this. I'm like, oh, I want to do my own version of that.
Or you just get inspired in a moment.
Oh yeah. In the moment, like I've had videos go viral where I was just goofing around and I pulled out my phone and I recorded something for 10 minutes. You know, it's nuts. It's crazy. But sometimes that's how it works. So it's a ton of experimentation, you know, but just make things with an audience in mind. You know, you've got a military sci-fi book, okay, like try to make stuff that would appeal to people who like military sci-fi. Here are 5 like underrated military sci-fi titles and like plug 4 titles that are killing it that people are love and then make your book that 5th one, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of stuff does really well. Like I recently had a post go viral that was 4 books that are making men love reading again. Mm. And it was The Way of Kings, Dungeon Crawler Carl, Red Rising, and The Legend of by Aaron N. Hall.
Yeah.
And that video, last I looked, had like 1.8 million views. And I've seen sales that, you know, speak to that.
So tell me, like, did you come up with that, or were scrolling on social media, you saw something similar, and you're like, oh, I can do that for.
Well, I mean, you see the like four books like this, five books like this everywhere.
Yeah,
but it was just kind of a fun idea that I came up with.
You did your version of it.
Let's just try it. Let's throw it out there, and I recorded it in 10 minutes, and then, you know, 2 million people saw it.
How much editing are you doing on those reels?
Oh gosh, as little as possible, as long as I can get away with.
That's a good answer.
Because I mean, you can spend 5 hours recording like a really sick piece of content,
sure,
and you might throw it out there and it'll get 300 views.
Yeah,
you know. So I'm constantly trying to seek the intersection of ease of creation and effectiveness. You know, if I can record something in 20 minutes that I know is going to get like 50,000 views, I'm going to do that, you know, because that's more effective to me than spending 5 hours recording something that maybe gets 1,000.
When you say spending 20 minutes, does that include, like, what's the runtime of these reels that you're doing?
Like a minute.
A minute?
Less,
yeah. And so part of that 20 minutes is the editing. Are you doing graphics and stuff on top? Or?
Not a ton. I mean, like, I usually record on TikTok.
Okay.
You know, so it lets you record one take at a time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you can, like, edit each little take, you know, kind of take... 0.2 seconds off the beginning or off the end, so it, like, flows better, and then you can insert text. I don't do a lot of crazy edits with it, but I mean, what I have done has paid off really well because I've passed like 400,000 followers on both Instagram and TikTok combined.
Now, are you making money on Instagram and TikTok on top of the books that you're selling, or is it just a vehicle to market?
For a hot minute, I was making really good money on TikTok because they pay you based on views on TikTok. Like, you have to meet a certain requirement of your audience is this big and you've had this many views in the last while. They want to see that you're like a creator that's putting out like really engaging stuff. But I have a series called Caveman Cooking,
mm-hmm.
which has nothing to do with my books, but I was goofing around in my kitchen and I posted a video. It did pretty well. So I'm like, okay, let's try this again. And then that second video went viral. And so for like months, I posted one caveman cooking video a week. And I just like slipped my book into the video somewhere where, like, if something's baking for 20 minutes, okay, I'm going to go read this book and I'm going to show you what it is. So like millions of people have seen The Legend of like they are aware of it. But I did have a caveman cooking video go viral in October where TikTok paid me about $2,000 for that video. Yeah. But then they changed their payout structure like 2 months later.
Sure.
And now I get like $100 or $200 a month. So,
what I'm hearing is it's just a constant hustle.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And like, I don't have a full-time job right now.
Yeah.
Like, I do contract work for a handful of different companies and I'm an author and a content creator. So I have like a lot of little things coming in to help me pay my mortgage. But if I didn't, like, if I was working a full-time job and I was still writing my books and trying to produce all this content, woof. I don't know, guys.
You mentioned when you got this advice, one of the things you were like, you were kind of scared to jump into.
I was really nervous.
How much of this is like, I don't want to be annoying, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, how much of that is, and same with you, Brandon, like you've got to go out going to schools and stuff. And it's like how much of fear do you guys have of like,
of being annoying?
I've got to tell, I think, Brandon, you describe it as planning your own birthday party, right? Like that's the way you describe it. And nobody wants to be that person. So how do you guys deal with that?
Here's the thing. It is really hard to be annoying online, honestly. You know,
competition is pretty steep.
Because here's the thing. Like everybody, I don't know what the average usage of like social media time or screen time is now, but it's like some crazy number where people are on their phones like 6 hours a day now. Right. And how many reels, how many pictures, how many videos are people seeing every day? If they're spending 6 hours on their phone, you are a drop in the bucket.
Yeah,
you're a drop. So it is so hard to be annoying. Like I've seen, you know, TikTokers and content creators say you got to post 10 times a day. And I'm like, excusez-moi, I'm not going to do 10 times a day, but I'll do one a day. So, I mean, you have to have that consistency, but it's actually really, really, really hard to be annoying. So don't worry about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get over that?
A few weeks. But even then, like I'm naturally an introverted person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've told my friends, like if I was selling, you know, millions of books, I'd disappear. I'd have a blog. You wouldn't find me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I have no desire to be the center of attention. I'm putting myself out there day after day because I want you to read my dang books. That's what it comes down to.
Look, here's the thing. You're trying to build a brand.
Yes.
So you can have a job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. and like the it's not fun to plan your own birthday party. That's why I describe it that way. Nobody wants to plan their own birthday party. Yeah. What's fun is to have someone throw a birthday party for you that you show up to, and you know people loved you and threw a party for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to have a party and nobody's throwing it for you,
you got to throw it yourself.
Sometimes that's the best way to go. Because you're like, you know what? I want a party, and there's friends I want to see, and I want to have this moment, and so I'm just going to make it happen.
That's such a good comparison, because it's like promoting your book. You know, it's awesome when people are posting on their own Instagram, on their own TikTok about Fable Haven or The Legend of and they're talking about how much they loved it. So because like, I'll snatch that up, I'll share it on my story. Thank you so much for, you know, being a sounding board for me, like, you know, being one of my missionaries promoting one of my books. But, you know, if no one's doing that, you got to throw your own party. You got to promote yourself. Yeah. You got to throw yourself out there and kind of hype yourself up and be your own biggest fan. Even if it's uncomfortable.
Another way I think about it is you push and push and push until it pulls you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to push until you're pulled along.
Yeah.
And like the point of the pushing is hoping eventually it will pull you.
Dude, yes.
And eventually you can like chill a little bit on the pushing and not push so hard because you paid your dues.
Yeah.
And you built a brand and then you did good work inside of that brand. And now it has a little bit of a life of its own.
Totally. Totally. Dude, what I did for that was when The Legend of was getting ready to come out, I started like a really aggressive PR campaign, like 6 months in advance, where I put together a spreadsheet of like hundreds of influencers, critics, bloggers who liked Cozy Fantasy. You know, and I got their emails and I got their, you know, their Instagram handles, whatever. And I messaged them one by one.
Okay.
Oh, and it was a ton of footwork. And I said, hey, I got this book. The beta readers loved it. It feels like The Princess Bride and Adventure Time and like the D&D movie. Would you like a copy? I'd happy to send one as a gift. And 17% of the people I reached out to said yes. Like 17% conversion. That's insane.
It's pretty high. Yeah.
It's bonkers. But
and that's probably partly that you did some good research.
Yes.
And asked the kind of people who might say yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to target.
It also means your pitch was good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But it's like it gave the book the momentum it needed once it came out, because suddenly there was like a pretty considerable amount of people on the internet who are like, yeah, this Legend of Fantasy comedy is really good. Like,
giving some buzz. Yeah.
And even now it's to the point where I look at my sales on Amazon and I'm like, holy cow, this is selling now. And I'm like, you know, I'm still promoting and stuff, but like the community's taking this and they're running with it. Like they're doing a lot of my work for me now, which is awesome. That's a great feeling.
Aaron, do you ever get frustrated? Because it seems like your passion is writing.
Oh yeah.
Right. And now in order to be a full-time writer, you've got to learn all these skills.
I'm a businessman too.
Yeah. It reminds me of people who study to become a dentist only to find out that they should have got a degree in owning a business. Mm. Right. Because they're doing things.
That's a big part of the,
it's a huge part of it. Yeah. Like do you get frustrated with that side of things being like, if I could just be writing,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, yes, I'm a storyteller at heart. I love writing stories. I love writing books. I love getting those glowing DMs and emails from people who are like, I loved this so much. Thank you. Please never stop writing. But I'm exhausted by the business aspect, but it also like is exciting in a lot of ways where I'm like, I'm building something for myself. Like last summer I built my own Shopify store where like people can order directly from me and I take a bigger cut of the sales. And that was really daunting, kind of scary, and learning how to connect it all and make sure I get paid and, you know, make sure I'm going to be okay with the tax man come next year. But like, I love finding ways to make my work more accessible to people while still getting paid. You know, like something I recently did was I got my YouTube monetized. You know, I put up an audiobook for free and then I just started getting a ton of like listening hours and a ton of follows. And within like weeks, you know, I was monetized. So I figured, hey, I'm going to put all my audiobooks out there for free because I'm going to make the money from the ad revenue and people get my audiobooks for free.
Yeah.
That's total accessibility.
Yeah. And you're creating audience. You're creating market
share.
Exactly.
Are you reading the audiobooks?
I have two audiobooks I've read. I know because I have this very sultry voice. It's really, really nice to listen to. No, I narrate my collections of stories, poems, and weird third things. Mm-hmm. I'm Sorry, Here's a Plasma Rifle and Love Letters to a House on Fire. I still need to record Where Should I Put This Woodpecker? But my flagship novels are recorded by professionals. Adriel Brandt has narrated The Legend of He's doing the second Legend of right now. and he did my Wevelian Chronicles fantasy trilogy, and he's terrific. So I trust the professionals as much as I can, because I actually don't love the process of editing audiobooks.
Yeah. What about the just the balance of writing versus promoting? How much of your average week? How many hours are you putting into writing versus promoting?
I mean, if I'm in the process of producing a book, you know, drafting, revising, I try to split it, you know, down 12 o'clock, you know, each day. I spend the morning working on the book and spend the afternoon and evening working on the marketing. So it's 50-50. But even right now, you know, we're recording this in February. The second Legend of Oz is done. It's been submitted to Ingram, KDP, everything as of this week. Like, it's very recent. So right now I'm just in full marketing mode. You know,
yeah, because you don't have a project.
Exactly. And I'm going to be that way up until the release of the book. But oh gosh, it's like, I feel the itch, guys. I feel the itch. Like, I'm, you know, the third Legend of Oz, I'm planning for a release early next year, maybe end of this year, if I'm feeling crazy. But I want to outline this, you know, like, it's just, I feel it. It's like scratching my brain.
Yeah, you're hungry to get at the next one.
And I want to stitch these plot points together and craft this into a narrative with all the emotional points that it's going to hit on and still making my audience laugh. And anyway, so yeah, it's a tough balance.
So a really important asterisk to put on all this is that as a guy who's been traditionally published for a lot of years, I still do a ton of my own marketing.
Oh, sure.
And put a lot of effort into my own marketing, and did a lot of planning my own birthday party and a lot of like grassroots school visits and a lot of just grassroots efforts.
Prime example is right now we're doing a podcast.
Here we are.
And to pretend that this isn't a marketing engine for the books that you write, it would be disingenuous,
it's
right?
It's part of what this is, right?
Yep. And that's just one little piece, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so like part of what I'm saying here is, if you're independently published and you're having to worry about all this marketing stuff, you're not entirely different from, I think, the people who are pretty smart being traditionally published.
Oh, totally.
Are also doing everything that they're good at.
Oh, yeah.
To help their books do well, right? And so, like, that includes, I'm good in person, so lots of grassroots. I can talk, and I have a friend who was happy to do podcasts with me, and thank goodness, because I don't think I would have done this on my own. I'm not enough.
You guys are a great team too. Like, I'm a fan of this podcast. I was thrilled when you invited me to be here.
Oh, we should have mentioned that at the beginning, that you're a listener.
I listen every month.
Which may be our first guest that we've had on who actually listens to the podcast.
Who's been a listener. Yeah, but I keep hearing more people, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate that you liked it, and here's the thing, The way to make something worth doing is to make it good, right? And so if I want the podcast to be effective at marketing, my job is to make the podcast super good and super useful.
Yeah.
Because if it's good and useful, it'll be good marketing.
Yes.
And like the most important thing, whether you're traditionally published or independently published, that you're going to do is the book has to be good.
Yeah.
Because if you went and bugged all these influencers,
yes,
and then they accepted the copy because they liked the pitch, and then the book wasn't good,
you're sunk.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not going to do you anything.
Exactly.
There's not going to be buzz. Mm-hmm. And so, like first and foremost, always is trying to create a good book.
Yes.
Right. And then, just to add a little insult to injury, by the way, you're going to have to market that yourself to some degree, almost whether you're traditional or indie. And if you don't market it, no one's going to hear about something that they haven't heard about.
Totally, right? Totally. And I'm going to say, like, no amount of marketing can make up for the sin of an okay book and an okay cover. Yeah. I think the most important piece of marketing you can do for your book, bar none, is to get a really good cover. A really, really good cover. Because I've seen so many indie friends of mine who, like, oh, they got a great book. Ooh, that cover's rough. You know, like, they have, like, an uncle or a sister who's, like, a designer, but, like, not a terribly great designer, and it's like, oh, they'll do it for me, and they will, good for you, but also, like, no one's gonna want to read that book. This is what I like to say. It's you gotta get a cover that passes the Barnes and Noble test. Like, take off your author hat and put on your reader hat, and imagine yourself walking through a Barnes and Noble and you see your book sitting there on a shelf. Is it gonna catch your eye enough for you to stop and pick it up? You know, if it doesn't, you got to get a different cover, you know? And thankfully, the Legend of it's got the word in big, fat, red letters on the cover with, like, this fantasy background.
Which is curiosity-inducing.
Yeah, exactly. It's enough to make someone go, what the heck? And, like, stop and pick it up. And it works. Like, people love the cover. And, yeah, it works.
Yeah, and you're trying to find a cover that matches the personality of the book.
Exactly. Yeah. It has to match the tone.
So that it creates an invitation to those who might like it.
Yes. Right? Yeah, but I've seen, I mean, my friend Brady Hunsaker is another indie author who's killing it. I mean, he posted something on his Instagram where he sold 10,000 books in the month of December. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah, as an indie. That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy numbers. So, it's crazy numbers for anybody.
Yeah. So I hit him up and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Are you running some like killer Facebook ads? Like, what's going on? He said, honestly, it's the cover. You know, I got Jeff Brown to do it. He's a terrific illustrator. I mean, he's been commissioned, you know, all across like the big five publishers, and he's done a bunch of stuff for indies too. Fantastic fantasy illustrator. And he did the cover for this.
So if you have a little bit of a budget, you would say number one spot.
Yeah.
Put it into the cover.
I mean, treat your cover like your wedding photos. I mean, don't just get a good deal, but like those photos are going to be on your wall for the rest of your life.
Give me a sense of what you're paying for a cover and how much of is back end or paying up front.
Oh, it's up front. Yeah.
Usually it's a work. I was wondering, because like theoretically you could give them a percentage, but usually a cover is a work for hire.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I know I just said like don't hire a friend or whatever. Like, thankfully the Legend of illustrator is a friend of mine, you know, and he's not a full time illustrator, but he likes it. And he had just the look that I needed. I knew his style of illustration.
And you don't need to tell us prices on any of your books specifically or deals, but what ballpark are we talking about to get a cover?
At least, if you want a really good cover, look at spending at least $1,000.
Yeah.
If you want like a truly, like, if you want to fool people into thinking it's a trad book, which is honestly like a good target to set, expect to spend like $2,000 or $3,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, indie publishing's not cheap.
If you believe in this enough that you're investing all this time and effort, it's like, save up some money and do it the best you can. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Right. It is always hard to create and share content. It's hard to get established as a credible voice.
Yes.
And so it really takes something like a lifetime of effort. You know what I mean? Like if you want to do it for a lifetime, you know, it takes some serious, it's a matter of years for most people, right? Mm-hmm. What would you say to people who feel daunted right now, hearing all this stuff that can be required?
Oh gosh. I don't know. I would ask them like what their goals are as a writer. I mean, some people just want to write a book and, you know, for their own enjoyment. And maybe they just want to share it with family and friends. I think if that's what will make you happy, that's awesome. If you want to be a full-time author and do the book signings and, you know, be making a full-time living as an author, be prepared for a ton of work. I mean, I work 50, 60-hour weeks, pretty normal. But there's a fulfillment in it. Like, I'm energized, like, seeing my sales and getting the nice messages from fans on social media and making friends in the online book community. Like, I've met so many amazing people in like the indie fantasy bookstagram scene. A lot of us got to like hang out and meet at Dragonsteel Nexus this last year. And it was my people. My tribe were all in Salt Lake City for a few days and it was such a joy. Like, so I don't know. I feel like I threw a lot at you with that simple question.
That's a ton. We've got to wrap up here pretty soon, but tell me
45 minutes. I mean,
we're cruising through it.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your podcast that you do on YouTube and the type of people you have on there and how people can find it.
Totally. So it's called Aaron's Book Nook, and it's every episode's usually like 30 to 40 minutes, but I get a bunch of my book friends, you know, just one book friend at a time to come on the show and just chat with me. It's a lot of like online book personalities or authors to just talk about why they love fantasy or sci-fi, like where that love began, you know, why storytelling matters to them. If they're a writer, I'm asking, like, what's your process like? Like, how do you market? How did you find your audience? Like, what motivates you to keep writing? So if you just love general book chat, like, it's a fun place to be. And there's a new episode every week.
Which we're assuming everybody listening to this podcast.
Yeah, you guys are my audience. Yeah, you should come hang.
So if you're listening to this podcast, it's Aaron's Book Nook. Is that what it's called?
Aaron's Book Nook on YouTube. Give it a search. You'll find me.
Yeah. And then you've had Brandon on recently as well. Yeah, right? Brandon, has that one been released yet? Or?
Oh, yeah. It's been released. Yeah. Brandon is like my first big shot, you know, to come on the podcast. He was very gracious to, you know, give me half an hour of his time among his
I was happy to.
It was fun. We had a nice chat. But yeah, we've got some more authors coming up soon and some more like book personalities, and it's just fun. Like, if you're bookish and you just love listening to people talk about books, like, you'll have a good time with it.
So here's the thing that's coming to mind as we wind this down. Part of how you do this whole job is you play to your strengths. Mm-hmm. And so if you're the kind of person who's like, yeah, I don't mind marketing. I don't mind doing this kind of like this sounds doable. This sounds like something that's in my wheelhouse. Yeah. Then maybe that makes indie publishing make a little more sense for you than it would to the next guy.
Sure.
There's also a road to this where you put a lot of effort into making that book better until an agent gets excited about it, or traditional publishing gets excited about it. That was more the road I took, where I had some stuff that was that didn't succeed, right? And until I did, and that's its own way to keep upping your quality. And so there's different roads to get to the same destination. Yeah. So think about what you're good at. Think about what sounds more doable and more palatable, and that might be an approach to attack if you're somebody trying to break into this industry.
Yeah. Totally. And on top of that, the indie world today is not what it was when you were first breaking in, Brandon.
No.
And the indie world wasn't really an option for you when you first started.
Unless you want to do vanity press or something.
But now...
It was not as good of an option.
No.
But now it's a legitimate option.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so if you're an aspiring author and you've got a voice and you want it out there and you may not be making the traction you want with publishers and agents and whatnot, I think doing the indie route is a great and viable way to get your books out there.
Totally.
And if it's something you want to do, you can always transition from the one to the other. It happens actually in both directions sometimes.
Yeah.
And so like it's nice to know that this channel exists, mm-hmm. right?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, my friend Maurice, he wrote a terrific book called Cello's Gate, and he just announced this week that it got picked up by Simon & Schuster. I mean, it was out for a year as an indie title, won a bunch of awards, like was getting passed around and read by hundreds, if not thousands of people. Then, you know, Simon & Schuster said, hey, how about we get a piece of that? Yeah,
let's
so now he's a trad author. So that's completely, it can happen. It can happen.
Well, that's awesome. Well, let's close up. Let's pay the bills a little bit. Why don't you guys tell me what we have coming up? This is going to release in May. We're anticipating. So, Aaron, what do we have for you coming up?
The second Legend of Uh is out. Go read the first Legend of Uh, then go read the second Legend of Uh. You're going to laugh a lot. You're going to have your heart warmed, and you're going to meet some lovable characters you'll never forget. So go do that, especially if you love fantasy.
Awesome. Brandon, what do you have coming up?
And if we're in May, then my Guardians Book One is now finally out. This is something I'm really proud of. I think it's some of my best work. It's definitely three books that will escalate in intensity, and book one itself should be really fun. And so, yeah, track that down if you like, if you want to read a thicker Brandon Mole book that has a lot of punch, and I think is some of my best work.
Awesome.
That's exciting, especially since, you know, we've been doing this for a couple of years now, and I think we've been talking about Guardians the whole time, right?
So this will be
the kind of the first episode that ever gets released post-Guardians release.
Yeah.
And so
Let's go. Congratulations
on that. That's really awesome. If you haven't picked it up yet, go pick it up. Go pick up the both of the Legend of books as well. And thanks for joining us on another episode of Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole.